La Jolla, California, UC San Diego Athletics presents TritonCast, the podcast for the UC San Diego Tritons. Here are your hosts, Jeff Toriel and Jenny Stevens.
Welcome to episode 13 of TritonCast, the official podcast for UC San Diego Athletics.
In today's Triton Spotlight, we chat with former Triton men's basketball player, John Santillan. He came to UC San Diego after a successful stint at UC Santa Cruz, where he led the nation, all three divisions, in scoring. He continued his success on the court at UC San Diego, and he earned his economics degree in La Jolla. After that, John went on to play professional basketball, coach internationally, and so much more. You're not going to want to miss this conversation. It'll come your way shortly in this week's Triton Spotlight.
But first, we go around campus. Learn more about the athletics department, the UC San Diego campus, and the San Diego community in our Triton Tuesday series on UCSDTritons.com. Also, like us on Facebook at UCSDTritons to catch the latest Junior Triton Club content. You can get your Junior Tritons moving with the Tritons in Training video.
Now it's on to our Triton Spotlight. Here's our conversation with men's basketball alum, John Santillan.
So, John, you've been a basketball player, coach, scout, and pretty much everything in between. So tell us how you got your start playing basketball.
Well, first of all, it's a wonderful honor and a pleasure to be interviewed by you, Jennifer, and then and the UC San Diego community. It's great just to be, you know, an alumni and to be remembered and to even have the opportunity to discuss any and all things. So, you know, basketball for me was a means to a dream. You know, I grew up in Tucson, Arizona, and had a dream of playing college basketball one day. And, you know, a kid from the South Side, you know, I'm a Hispanic player. It was just, the odds were stacked against me to do that. But, you know, at that time, that was a dream. And luckily enough, I just kept pursuing it, and that my parents had the right attitude to say, your education comes first. And then from there, we'll see what happens. But they were totally supportive in my dream. And I was just lucky enough just to keep my head down and not have distractions and keep pursuing the dream.
Was it easy for you to reach the college level and get to play basketball there? Or were there some struggles along the way?
Well, you know, I'm not 6 foot eight, you know, not any of those things. And this was in the era before internet, and there is no social media. There is nothing to advertise who you are. And so I definitely was fortunate that people before me paved the way. So there was a famous basketball camp called Five Star Basketball Camp in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that you had to be invited to. And it was the modern day equivalent of major scouting that happened there. And I was fortunate enough to get an invitation to go. And there where my eyes were open, that's when I saw players from all around the United States and how tremendous they were, how gifted they were. And it allowed me the opportunity to compete, but also to see how far away I was from what they were. And I was grateful for that first opportunity. But no, living in Tucson, Arizona, there was only one institution called the University of Arizona there, and other institutions never, you know, did not know. They just didn't see. It's not today's world of scouting. So you just hopefully hit a magazine publication and maybe somebody looked at you and there you go. And there you go. You know, it really was definitely different than today.
You mentioned you're from Tucson. So how did you end up starting at UC Santa Cruz then?
So it is absolutely a miracle, actually. You know, I have no idea how it happened, because I never heard of the school and I never saw the school. I just remember one day getting a phone call from the then coach, Joe Richardson, one day just called my house and started talking to me about it. And at that point, I was not recruited by anyone, really. Only junior colleges, sporadically throughout the region. And And when I got approached by UC Santa Cruz, I was totally enamored with it because it was the first time I was wanted. So it made complete sense to me to go sight unseen if I could get into the institution, and which I did.
That's awesome. I'm sure it was somewhat of a nerve-wracking experience, though. I mean, going to this college that you weren't super familiar with. So how was the adjustment for you?
Yeah, it's totally different. You know, here's a kid from Tucson, Arizona, who my prior experience was only going to a basketball camp in the Midwest. And now I'm going into the trees of Northern California. I have no idea where I'm going. Never have gone there. Haven't met the coach. I don't know anything. Again, this is a totally different world. You know, there was no... You had to do all your applications, you know, on paper. Everything was submitted handwritten. And so the same with just phone calls, and you just didn't have any idea who you were going to go see or what you were about to experience. And that is exactly was what it was. I was welcomed with open arms when I got there. So that was great. And an adjustment period for sure, because it was cold and raining and definitely different. You know, I was exposed to everything brand new, which kind of tells you where you're from. You know, I had been exposed to different music, different people, different cultures. That was not part of my existence growing up. So it was awesome.
Was going from Tucson to Santa Cruz somewhat of a culture shock for you?
Oh, huge. Not only that I had roommates, you know, that were different nationalities and from different parts of the country. I also was exposed to radicalism a bit, you know, protesting and issues that I'd never paid attention to because they weren't in my vision. And the same came true with just being engrossed in topics that I never, again, just never talked about. So totally a shock to me. It took some adjusting, you know, even with music. I literally, it's a shock, you know, because I tell my wife all the time, you know, I was like, I had never heard U2 before. And it was like a big time band. That was the first time I had ever heard of them. And, you know, it was a lot of those first time experiences that just kept coming my way.
It was also your first time playing collegiate basketball. So how was that transition for you going from the high school level to the college level?
Well, you know, I'm the first in my family to go to college. So I was on a path that nobody could explain. My mom and dad, my dad had a sixth grade education, and my mom finished eighth grade. So they had no more knowledge to afford me as to like what I'm to look forward to. And to be honest, within my own neighborhood, I was the only one to go as well. So it was really a shock to the experience to know what I'm going for. But I get there and, you know, I have blinders on. I am totally going to seize the day with this opportunity to play college basketball. That is my dream. But I did adhere to the lessons that my parents told me, like, you know, your education is first and foremost, and then basketball comes after or whatever else comes after. So I was fortunate enough that I did not allow my studies to go awry, that I did focus on that first before the alternate activity.
Well, that's incredible because, I mean, even though you were so focused on your academics, you had such success on the basketball court. You're still UC Santa Cruz's leading scorer. You led the nation in scoring 1985 through 86. So talk to me about that season and what that was like being the best in the country.
Yeah, so that season was great for a number of reasons. So during my summers, I was really afforded the opportunity to be around some incredible people. So one of them was Coach John Wooden, who became a mentor of mine because he saw me at a younger age scoring. My freshman year, I scored 20 points a game. I get invited to be a counselor at his basketball camp. And subsequently, then it goes to Pat Riley and some others. And a heck of a way to spend a summer. You know, it was just playing basketball, listening to people and trying to compete against the best in the country, other counselors. So there is when I meet a coach by the name of Luther Witsit, who decides that I'm worthy enough to be trained by him and his two sons who played at Stanford. And now that training during those summer months was absolutely intense. It changed the whole complexion of how I approached the game. The level of athletes that came in the building were from UCLA to you name it. They were all the top level players from Duke. They were everywhere. And it was to be trained to not just make baskets, but to make them all net, not hit the rim and do it consecutively. Well, that took what the term is discipline. It took a different way of doing things. And that allowed me to catapult from my freshman year to my sophomore year to 25 points a game. And then subsequently then to my junior year where I get 30, 31 a game. And now I'm used to competing against the top level athletes now. And so when I get to a college basketball against my own competition level, I had already seen the better athletes in the country. And I was, you know, for lack of a better word, I was prepared mentally. I knew I had put in the work. I deserved what I was going to get. And if I had an opportunity, just a little slither to get open, I believed that I was going to make the basket. And, I had, luckily, the absolute support of my teammates. Without them, it would not have worked. You know, I needed to have a point guard who wanted to get me the ball. I needed to have other athletes who were willing to sacrifice their bodies to set screens so that I could get open. And we all had to learn how to share the ball. And I was really cognizant of that fact, you know, initially, because I did not want it to be just me and not recognize my teammates, because I couldn't inbound the ball to myself and I couldn't defend against the others by myself. So I was really caught, really, really aware of, are my teammates okay? If they're all aboard, then yes, you know, it was a way for me to score for sure, but it would not have been possible without the help and support of my teammates. No way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, basketball is such a team sport, but the success that you had, how meaningful was it for you to see all that discipline and hard work pay off and lead the nation?
Yeah, it was tremendous, you know, because again, here I am working with Coach John Wooden, and Coach Wooden is now allowing me to go to his home to pick him up and transport him back and forth to camp. I'm now elevated to head counselor status so I can spend time with him. Oh my gosh, you know, it's not just because of what basketball is doing to me, but he sees that I'm up at 5 a.m. and I'm the only person in the gym. And he sees that I'm asking all the other coaches to help me throughout the evening after I've done my duties. And so the conversations with him were so amazing because they were not necessarily basketball related. These were all life lesson type of things. And what I learned probably the most from him is that when he had time, he made time for everybody. He carved it out. There's a story that I frequently tell when I'm at his apartment or his condo in Encino. I'm there and we're having conversation and he's having a great time talking to me. And the phone constantly is ringing in his house with the old time answering machine. And it beeps and, hey coach, it's Tom Izzo at Michigan State, beep. Hey coach, it's Bobby Knight at Indiana, beep. It's nonstop people calling. And I look at him at one point, and we had known each other for a while now. And I said, don't you want to get those, coach? You know, these are some big time people. I will have time for them, John. I will get to them in due time, but you're in front of me. This is time for us to be together. And it was at that moment when I recognized that here's what's perhaps the greatest coach of all time, spending time with some some kid who, you know, isn't even on the equal level of those other coaches. But to him, I'm as important because at that moment in time, I'm in front of him. And I never forgot that. I recognize that a lot. Now, anytime somebody calls me or whatever, I carve out time because if Coach Wooden could do it for a guy like me, I sure can do that for anybody.
Wow. What an incredible story. I mean, how did you feel being a college scholar athlete and having these conversations and interactions with the best of the best?
Yeah, they were, you know, the thing about Coach Wooden is that he had a funny side, humorous side to him. So he would, he was a practical joker. My man, he would do all kinds of things practical joke wise. And you never knew if he was serious or not, because you always looked at him as if he was God walking, you know, and you're just like, oh my God, you know, what did he say? It's unbelievable. The ball, basketballs would stop as soon as he walked in the building, everybody staring at him. It's unbelievable. And I was doing a shooting demonstration, and he's like, walked by me and goes, I wish you could make a basket or two once in a while, you know. It was just that type of humor to allow you the fact that, like, he's amazing, you know. He's just trying to have fun with you. But the conversations in the car were about life; they weren't about basketball. There were comments constantly. He recited Shakespeare verbatim, and. It was, you know, I'm shocked and listening, and here I am, just a college athlete soaking it all in as best as I can at that moment. Not all of it making sense to me, especially, you know, there's no softer pillow than a clear conscience. Things like that that he's saying to you that don't make sense to you when you're 20 some years old. But later in, you're going, yeah, I know what he's talking about now. And I think that's the epitome of what coaching is about. The X's and O's, they don't matter. This is the difference between a transactional coach and a transformational coach. And the transactional coaches are almost everywhere. Those are the guys that are concerned about wins and losses, the coach of the year awards, which athletes are all Americans, what's my record, did I win the conference? The transformational coaches are concerned about 10 years later, will I still be hearing from these athletes? Did I offer them the opportunity to pursue their passion? Was I able to be there on the phone with them? Am I invited to their weddings? Will I know who their significant others are? Will I know their children? That's what the lessons he was teaching me, because basketball is a young person's game. It ends for everyone. And I just knew that I wanted to have no regrets. I wanted to do this sport to the best of my ability, give it all that I could, because I knew it didn't last long. And once I was done, I just wanted to walk away and not have any regrets with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, clearly you soaked up like a sponge all the knowledge from your coaches that you had. So talk to me about what it was like transitioning then from one head coach at UC Santa Cruz to playing under another head coach at UC San Diego.
Yeah, so my junior year at UC San Diego, or excuse me, UC Santa Cruz, by my sophomore year, we had a coaching change. So I played under a new coach that junior year. And while I led the country in scoring, I just felt that just things weren't going right, in my opinion, with the whole time of chemistry and allowing us to win. And even though I was super successful in bringing notoriety to the institution at the time, it just, my relationship with the coach just soured. So those summer months, Coach Tom Marshall was at UC San Diego at the time, and we had met quite often at Pat Riley's basketball camp multiple times he said, you know, if he wanted to transfer, he would always find a place for me. And so that one summer, I literally went up to him and said, you know, I am contemplating this. But I had also given that consideration to Coach Wooden. And he told me, you know, while I don't condone transferring, if you do it, you know, it's better to do it within a UC system, you know, because he had coached at UCLA, and he was like, and with somebody who wants you, you know, that's going to be the case. And it was great. At that point, Tom Marshall said, want you, made all the opportunities afforded to me to do the transfer. And even though it was just for one season, I think it was a catapult to my professional career door opening. I got to play in a bigger market. And I had to sacrifice the scoring that I did to equate to wins, to more wins. And I was new kid on the block. I mean, my first when I first got to campus and start playing with the basketball players, they all know my reputation as the leading scorer in the country, and they think I'm just going to go in there and just shoot the ball all the time. I had to change. You know, I wanted them to know, like, I'm here. I know everybody here knows one another, and I know everybody here can score and has their roles and blah, blah, blah. I just want to fit in. And that's what I did. I completely changed my role. I became a point guard and distributed the ball to those other athletes who were used to scoring 20 points a game. And I remember sacrificing, but one day being sat down by the coaching staff and said they needed me to score as well in order for us to really win. But I needed my teammates to know, like, hey, I'm here for all of you. You know, I don't care what my points are. And luckily enough, it really worked out for us. It was a great experience for me because it was incredibly well-organized machinery of practices, of basketball, of professionalism from the staff and from the players. And I had a wonderful experience. And again, it opened up the opportunities for me to play professional basketball after that.
Well, your selflessness really showed because you actually led UC San Diego in assists per game that season. So, I mean, definitely a great experience for you. Talk a little bit about what it was like coming to UC San Diego, which is such a rigorous academic institution as well as a very successful athletic institution.
Yeah, that's the toughest part that not many understand. You know, there's competition in the classroom, and that dilemma follows a student athlete wherever they go. You know, you walk into that classroom setting and it is competition amongst one another. And the guy next to you may have already read the book and has the time to stay on campus and continue to read the book and digest the knowledge while you are representing the institution on a different level. And maybe you're away for days on end. While you're representing the institution, you still know that that competition back in the classroom still exists. And so that was tough for me to digest at times, because as you go up along the grade levels, you know, into your now pure major, like junior, senior year, it is competitive. It's tough to even think about getting out of school, man. Jennifer, I struggled many a day, man, knowing, like, could I get out of this place? Not only my major, but I needed two minors. You know, my God, man, they were keeping me there forever, it felt like. And at the time, maybe it's not that way now, but at the time, it sure felt like you were alone a lot. You had to figure things out alone to manage. And how to get a degree, you know, you just add drop classes, you know, you had to do all that stuff in person. You know, you just had to calculate a lot of things on your own. And many days that competition was stunning to me, because the life of a student athlete, you know, you must do the stuff early in the morning. That's probably what most of the athletes do now. And then attend your classes and then maybe come back again in the afternoon for whatever other things you're doing. And it lasts all through the evening to get through to see if you can digest the material and understand the material. And if you don't have teammates or other friends that you're meeting in class, it will be a lonely existence. And you can feel overwhelmed. And that's something that at times I did. I did feel like I felt overwhelmed. But that's where the fighting spirit, I suppose, comes in. And you just learn to, you know, the word decide is what I had to do. I had to make a decision. And the word decide means to cut off. So I literally cut off all other things and focused only on can I get through my academic life one thing at a time, one subject at a time, as well as my basketball at a time? So a lot of other things just go by the wayside when you do that.
Well, you were very successful with your academics. You ultimately earned your economics degree from UC San Diego. And you mentioned earlier that neither of your parents did graduate from college. So what was it like for you being the first in your family to have a college degree?
You know, it was an indescribable honor for my mom. My freshman year in college, I lost my dad. He died on my first break from college. So I was thrust into becoming a man quickly. I really discovered the value of having coaches in your life, because those people ultimately ended up becoming my fathers at some point. And that was wonderful because they made tremendous strides to come to Tucson, Arizona to support me, to go to wherever I was, to go get me, to make sure I was doing well. So I saw the value in that. Now, as we fast forward to me getting my degree, my mom is the proudest that she had, you know, because there was no one to carve path. You know, how do we describe this? And on my graduation day, I cross the podium. I get my degree. Coach Tom Marshall is there at the steps to give me a bottle of champagne and a congratulations. My mom immediately takes it because she considers it her graduation as well. And that evening is laced with a bunch of activities and awards and places to go and different things throughout the evening. And she's just beaming with joy because we're walking the campus. She has champagne. We're attending different ceremonies. And it was an achievement, not only for me, but it was for my family as well.
That's so incredible. I mean, that's so wonderful that you had like your mother's support there and the support from your coaches and all those who really cared about you. And I know you talked a little bit earlier about how UC San Diego opened up some doors for you to play professionally after you graduated. So what happened with that?
Yeah. So again, back in the time when I'm finishing my career, there is no social media and there's no internet. So what there were basketball publications. And of those publications, people could see your statistics and where you played and magazines. And because my junior year, I had led the nation in scoring, highlighted something. And then the fact that I transferred and did the assist ratio highlighted another thing. So I get this wonderful, wonderful opportunity to play in the Los Angeles Summer Pro League. And it is, by all accounts, it's the only NBA kind of version, free agent at the time, the biggest thing there was. And so I get an invitation to play there and play the whole, that whole summer months, do what I was supposed to do, you know, shoot when I'm open, pass the ball to everybody else. And I get an opportunity to get a contract to go play in Barcelona, Spain, my first rookie season. And there are many others that were clearly worthy of playing professional basketball out of UC San Diego during my time. But that's exactly what it is. It is just strictly about opportunity at that moment in time, was about the statistics that you had and what you were able to do. It's always that type of an environment. You know, it's a subjective business, so you never know who will take you. And so I was afforded that opportunity and I totally took it.
What was it like for you going to Barcelona after having been in San Diego?
So this a new world opens up now. I have no idea where I'm going. I'm going into a new country. I knew Spanish and could speak it, but had never had to live it the whole time. Mm-hmm. I think I know what I'm about to enter, but I'm not sure. These are tremendous professionals, multi-year professionals. I'm a rookie. I get the opportunity to start. It's great. My first game I am doing great. I think I am a superstar. I drive the lane. I make a basket. Oh, this is going to be great. I do it again. I get past my defender and I score another basket on a driving layup again. The third time, Jennifer, I do that, a guy hits me and I get 6 stitches on my forehead and I am out for the game. At that point, I realize this is different. This is different. There are intentional fouls. There was no way some guy, a rookie, who's going to drive the lane on me. There was a lot of this realization that came around now. And so you could get a couple layups a game, but you had to shoot. You had to do different things. So that's my first experience playing, and it was wonderful. And we played a lot of games during the season, and everything was just initially what I expected, but it was lonely because I'm far away, and the only method of communication was via collect phone calls. Mm-hmm. And those collect phone calls were expensive, and I had to have a hotel do it. And this is back in the day, you know, when they were a big board and they would literally punch in a wire, make a collect phone call back to my mom. And I knew she couldn't afford it. And yet I can't just wire money. That's not the way it is anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it's quick. Here I am. I'm fine. I'm here. Blah, blah. But you wrote a lot of letters. But you were lonely, you know, you were in your hotel room, you went to eat, you walked around a bit if you wanted to, but you always had practice and you always had a game and travel. So while people think it's an extremely fabulous lifestyle, it can be, but for the majority of the people that play the game in the world, it is a monotonous structure that's needed in your life, and you must... Yeah, at times you were going to be very lonely.
So it sounds like you didn't really have much time to do any sightseeing in Barcelona then, since you were so busy with the games and practices.
You could, you know, and people always ask me, you know, did you go here? Did you see that? You really could. But when you were off the court, the last thing you wanted to do was just keep on doing things on your feet and going out. Mm-hmm. You really wanted just to go eat and go home, stay, rest, sleep. The lifestyle is really like that. You know, you're an athlete, you play, you travel, your hotel, you sleep, repeat. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of that way. And so while you saw these sites, you're like, great. It's going to wear you out, man. You know, you would contemplate going, really, do I really want to do that? So I guess towards the end of my... Once I was approaching the end of my season, I would do a little bit more walking around and appreciate things, but not to the same degree. I still had a job to do, and it was always focused on my performance level. And because you do have, you know, you are judged by wins and losses, and literally in those restaurants, Jennifer, you could eat after a win. People are handing you drinks. They're buying you bottles of whiskey. And when you lose, no one wants to talk to you. It's very lonely. Your food's going to take a long time to get to you. So a lot of those little things happen. And it was like that. And I venture to say it's still like that, you know, because everyone wants to win.
So where did you go then after you finished your time in Barcelona?
So after that, then I end up going to play in Mexico. I changed countries because there was a structural change that happened in Barcelona at the time with foreign athletes. Every year there's the requirement that comes in with how many players could be foreign, how many could be domestic, it never ends, right? So at that point, the changes in FIBA to who was a foreign player changed. So I end up going to Mexico to play my basketball career now. And again, it's great. It's wonderful, with the exception that at this time of the year, we're playing 4 times a week. And it's exhausting. You know, it's travel, it's hotel, it's game, it's to the next site. It's just, that was the lifestyle of professional athletes. In Europe, it wasn't like that. In Europe, it was based off the soccer pro model, which is one game per week. And that one game had extreme pressure on it, just like soccer does. And eventually basketball turned to two games per week. But majority of Europe still operates in that model, 1 to 2 games per week. When I got to Mexico, it was four nights a week. And it was good in that sense because, you know, you just thought about the next game. You were a total professional. You thought about game after game after game. But you really had to take care of your body, and there were no such thing as training staffs. And, you know, if you got injured, you were replaced. Lots of things happened in those days. Not so much uncommon like today. I'm sure the same things still happen, but it was challenging nonetheless.
Was the rigor of the playing career for you part of why you ended up going into coaching eventually?
You know, I wasn't sure if I could be a coach. To be honest, Jennifer, I thought that my knowledge of putting the ball in the basket and knowing what I was doing as an athlete, that I maybe couldn't tell others how to do it. And that I wasn't going to be good enough to show them how to do that. Even though I had a doubt that I wonder if I could transfer my knowledge to someone else. And more importantly, could I transfer my passion for the game who didn't have it? There are a lot of athletes, Jennifer, that just don't have the same passion. They play, they're talented, they're extremely good. They just don't have the passion to keep pursuing greatness. They pursue good. And I want guys that, you know, want it to be great. And I think that was part of the problem with my professional career, is that I was surrounded by sometimes players who just wanted to be good, who just wanted the paycheck and didn't want to be great. But it is a job and you do what you do. And that's that. It's not uncommon, just like every other industry. But in the world of professional basketball, you're judged by your performance that night. And in the world of business, you're not necessarily judged daily. So that's why I was not sure. Could I be a coach? Because wins and losses are judged daily. And if I couldn't transfer that knowledge, what was I going to do? I was unsure. So that led to that insecurity. I wasn't sure if I could transfer that knowledge.
How were you able to overcome that insecurity?
So I had helped some athletes along the way who wanted to shoot the basketball better or wanted to get better totally on their collegiate teams. And each time that I came back to UC San Diego, because while I was supposed to graduate in 1987, I did not. I was still trying to complete my minor requirements. And again, the whole thing with a couple more classes did not always transfer from Santa Cruz to San Diego. I was constantly coming back in the spring to get my degree. And so each time that I came back to campus to earn my degree or to achieve it, I would run into the UC San Diego basketball players. And I would play with them to stay in shape and everything else. And there for a while, a lot of them were asking me to help them with their game. And so that's how I felt like, okay, yeah, I'm here to help them. That's good. And then once my playing career was over, Coach Mark Aumann was assistant basketball coach at the time at UC San Diego. And he told me, you know, there was a high school job in San Diego that maybe I should take a look at. He knew some people there and that I should apply.
That's so awesome that he opened the door for you like that. How was your experience coaching at the high school level? Because I know you were there for a little while.
Yeah, so I went to many schools. So I started out at Mar Vista High School in Imperial Beach, California. No one wanted that job. They had been losing consistently. It was at the time the closest school to the Mexican border, a forgotten place. But back in the 50s and 60s, man, it was a thriving environment. Imperial Beach was a great environment. The school was good and everything. And over time, it just changed and just things just were left alone. I apply wholeheartedly. Coach Wooden calls the school to recommend me for the job. They him. They answer the phone and they don't believe it's him. They hang up the phone. And he calls me and he goes, I called, but they hung up the phone. And I'm like, well, of course, man. Nobody believes who you are, you know? It's like, and this school, I was like, Coach, I'm going to a place that has nothing, you know? And he's like, make it something. And so, you know, therein again lies the secret again, you know, just one little word. It provides inspiration and you just approach it a different way. So it was the same thing. Wasn't sure how I was going to do it. Reach out to one of my players, my friends that was played at San Diego State at the time that I was at UC San Diego. And we had competed against each other. And I asked him, is Isaac Williams, I asked him, would you join me? Because I need help. I don't even know what I'm going to do. He says, yeah, absolutely. We go, and it's totally a downtrodden team. So we have to just provide them the opportunity to have structure and just to learn how to play the game 3-on-3, really. And we take some hard knocks for a while. And then light clicks and we win 10 games in a row. Absolute miracle happens. And that catapults us now into the next season. We get this incredible athlete who transfers from Long Beach Poly. And he is probably one of the top five recruits in all of the country. And he comes to our campus. His mom calls me and says, you know, I want him to play for you. She was in the Navy, goes to Coronado and lives in Imperial Beach. And she's like, he needs structure. You know, he needs the classroom. He needs all this, right? Because he was an unbelievable prospect who didn't want to go to class. You know, he gets the opportunity to play for me, gets the whole gamut of what a study hall is and how to take academics more serious than athletics. And he is everything that was advertised, maybe 250 letters, college letters at the time. We had scouts that came from all over the country for him. He was everything. And now we catapult our success into massive category range. This little tiny school that hadn't won anything is now officially on the map. We are now beating people that we never should have ever played against and beat. Sell out places, standing room only. It was crazy. Yeah, it's just incredible. Kid's name is Sidney Faison, and Sidney Faison ends up having a basketball career, but he's probably most known for being a lead actor in multiple roles, but Coach Carter is one of the roles that he is one of the principal characters in. And he takes us to unbelievable heights. And from there, the principal at Bonita Vista had come to see how I treated my athletes and how they responded to me and offered me his coaching opportunity within the same school district, but the marquee school within the district. And the same problem existed. They were down on their luck. And he wanted me to go in and see if I could transform it with more resources. So that's where I ended up.
How meaningful was it for you? I mean, after you had your doubts about coaching, being able to come in and turn the school around.
There was no question that it was great, but I did still know, Jennifer, that I was lacking in a lot of areas. I was lacking in as most young coaches do. They start out with something that they believe in their philosophy and what they think is going to happen, and it evolves over time. And that's what has started happening to me. It just started I look back to it now and I was like, man, I was totally different then than I am now. A lot of things I needed to learn along the journey. It's very rewarding at the time to have that success that I had. But I was lacking in certain categories that I needed to get better at. And so now I'm officially a coach. Now I'm looking into asking others how to get better. I know what my strengths are. I need to work on those weaknesses. But more importantly, I need to recognize what they are and say what they are. That's different. That takes your ego. You have to let it go. And I sought out. I looked for people that could help and take me to different places. That's where being a student at UC San Diego helped, because I was not afraid to keep my quest of thirst for knowledge. I kept going for it, and I never believed that I was at a point where I was so successful. I just kept looking for new ways to do things.
How were you able to translate your success at the high school level into having coaching jobs at the college level and professionally?
So now moving into the college ranks, it's all about connections. A lot of people think it's about how many games you win and lose. That has a lot to do with it, your experience within high school and the ability to move athletes to the next level for sure plays a role. But it is about trust. The next coaching job you take in a collegiate atmosphere is about trust. You have to, because you can't see what they're doing all the time. And 90% of the day is not basketball related. It's everything else related. And so I was fortunate that I went straight to the Pac-10 conference. I get a call from Oregon State University asking me how would I like to be a coach in the Pac-10. And the head coach there had coached me back long time ago when I lived in Tucson, Arizona. And we had stayed in contact ever since. And an opening on his staff happened. And it's about trust. It really was, you know, not only because you can't keep an eye on me. You have to know, like, could I do what I'm supposed to do along with all the other requests? And then I was thrust into a new world. Not only a world of athletics that is magnified, you know, on television and travel and prestige, but you had to relocate, you know, and that's a brand new ball game for many, many coaches. They forget that that's a big part.
Absolutely. Was the relocation challenging for you?
Well, once I did it, I'm lucky enough that I had a wife that understood that somehow, some way, basketball was going to be in my future. Didn't know exactly how it was going to go. I told her I wasn't able to maybe afford her tremendous riches in life, but I would give her an experience. So I told her, you know, the world, it could take us anywhere. And that was the first step of many in which it took us was to Corvallis, Oregon. And awesome experience. But that's how the jump went. You know, I go from a high school coach to a college coach and with multiple responsibilities as director of basketball operations. I was in charge of over 80 things, over 80 items I was responsible for. And, you know, it was nonstop. So wonderful, because I experienced everything. From speaking to all the alumni, 300 at a time in open forums, to recruiting on campus, to speaking engagements around the world. It opened up a tremendous windows for me.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about those speaking engagements around the world, because I know you're very well traveled. Do you have any destinations that stick out to you in particular? Some of your favorites?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, currently, you know, the last 12 years or so, I go to Italy all the time. And it's to speak to the Italian Basketball Federation and to do a basketball camp there as well. And that's something that I told them I would always do, you know, because the experience is wonderful. And from there, I have met many coaches around the world. I think I know a coach 28 different countries right now. Wow. And in that regard, it helps me because I give them what I have. There are many coaches in the world who know a bunch of things, have this knowledge, have information, and don't share it. You know, they think it's theirs to keep, you know, but I didn't invent the game. So it's up to you. You know, whatever you want to use, you can use. it's not going to bother me, man. It's still the athlete needs to put the ball in the basket to win the game, not, you know, it's not my knowledge, you know.
Right.
And so I go to Italy and Croatia every year because Croatia is just beautiful. And I met the national basketball coach there and a national team. And then I got the chance to work with his team over respective summers. And then that relationship just thrived. And I think that's really what I crave about the game. I want the relationships of the game. I really don't talk that much about basketball when I'm in these other countries about wins and losses and strategy and things. That doesn't matter to me. It's about the relationships that really matter. And that's what I love about it. So I have seen a lot of the world. I've spoken in many countries, Colombia, Dominican Republic, Mexico, Argentina, multiple places in Europe, the Middle East, China, Japan. I've been everywhere. This game has been great that it's taken me around the world with what I believe is that attitude, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, I think that attitude of not the wins and losses, but the relationships really being key and those learning experiences, it really stands out in your book, which is Take Your Shot, Make Your Play. Talk to me a little bit about how you decided to write that book.
Well, it started when I took my son. I have two sons. So I took my eldest son on his college visits. I wanted him to see different schools. So we were in the Midwest and we went to different schools. And we were at one point on the campus of Northwestern University, and we passed by as we're walking around, somebody doing a book signing deal, blah, blah, blah. And I walk in there and it's some guy talking about basketball. And it's fabulous. I'm fascinated, first of all, that somebody's being paid to do this on the campus. And come to know, Jennifer, the guy's not a basketball coach. He's a policeman. Todd wrote something about basketball and is coming across as some, I guess an expert of some sort on it, but never sat in the hot seat, not in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what it's like. You're giving the vision of what it's like many people do on YouTube, you know, and there are many coaches that coach on YouTube now that throw chairs at you and multiple basketballs, and it's a circus act. But the game is still about, can you separate? Are you able to put the ball in the basket under stress, but not under all those conditions like that? That doesn't happen. So getting back to that story, when I heard him, gentleman had the nerve to ask me if I would endorse the book, you know, and I said, no, I was nice and cordial. I didn't know who he is. That's when I came back and said, there's no way. I know that the audience that he's talking to are students. And those students have been told all along that they are, when you're young, Jennifer, every parent says, what do you want to be? And you say, I want to be a doctor. I want to be this. I want to be that. And they're given encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
When that student turns 18, all of a sudden it's like, oh, so how are you going to make money doing that? What are you going to do with that career? And their passion goes out the door. And I said, I'd be a hypocrite if I told my sons that. So I said the same thing. I said, I'm going to write a book about pursuing your passion. And because there are many obstacles in the way. And I'm not saying don't pursue the degree or whatever you're doing, but you can't give up your passion, because I didn't. I found ways around everything to keep in the game. And there's doubts. Yes. There's many hurdles. Yep. but I've stayed in it somehow, some way. And because I didn't lose my passion. So that's what the whole crux of me writing that initial book was about. So that some kid who was reading could go, yeah, I could do that. I could do that too. I could do whatever I wanted to do.
That's such a great message. How was the process of writing the book for you? Did it come easily, or was it a different process than you imagined?
Oh no, that's probably one of the hardest things ever. You know, it's it changed formation. No question, about 6 times. Everything changed. What I thought initially was going to be simple had no message behind it. And then if you've ever written a paper in your life, you know, you hate it. You know, I don't know many people that like writing papers, but it's a tough thing. And it goes into now the reader, who's going to read it. Will it pass an editor's, you know? And I wasn't concerned about Pulitzer Prize winning material. What I was concerned about was a simple read that someone could understand, that this kid who was adopted from Tucson, Arizona, can lead the country in scoring, can keep on playing, coach, speak around the world. How is that possible? Well, because I just kept pursuing my passion. And I know there's obstacles in the way, but you can do them. So that was my message that I wanted to get across. And when people saw me, they go, yeah, I'm just like him. I can do that. Absolutely. Because I never wanted like my own sons to look back and say, you know, how can you not tell me to pursue my passion? You're a hypocrite. I never wanted that.
What was the reception like once you published the book?
So yeah, it was awesome. You know, people around the world started buying it, and you know, it opened up some speaking engagements and local things, and people, you know, there was some executives, and I spoke recently, I think maybe, I don't know, maybe under a year already here in Irvine, and the president of the Rotary Club, you know, says the best speech they had heard, and it allowed me the opportunity to then do an adjunct professorship at Chapman University because of that, you know, because it just opens up worlds of opportunities, not only to kids, but it's, you know, an adult will understand that too. Like, where is it that you lost your passion? Because at some point you started pursuing money and you thought that was going to bring some happiness and joy. Most of the times it just doesn't bring that. So that's what I wanted it to be, but it was mainly intended to, that's the whole message behind it. Pursue your passion and see where that leads you. And hopefully they have some motivation behind it.
Yeah. Really awesome read. Definitely recommend it to all our listeners out there. I know since you wrote the book, you've still, of course, been very busy with more speaking and coaching. So what have you recently been up to, and especially during this pandemic?
So lately, this past season, I coached professional basketball in Japan. So I was there until April. And then I returned back, and this whole time as well, I've been an adjunct professor, like I said, at Chapman University, and staying busy there. Recently, I've been across the country. I took my youngest son to college and decided I would reconnect and visit with college head coaches on my journey to and from. So I visited something, I think, 17 states, and got to see some places that I had never seen before, walked on campuses that I never had been on. And because, you know, ultimately coaches trust coaches. They understand where you're coming from, and leads to, you know, these are relationships. You know, it's a subjective business, you know, so everybody is in the fire. Wins and losses matter. But, you know, relationships really last a long time. You know, that part's great. So, you know, an interesting part about the book, Jennifer, is that I had contacted UC San Diego as an alumni, I thought I could get my book in the bookstore, but no one ever contacted me back. And I walked into that bookstore, and I saw a section there a while back
I'm an alumni and I can't get my own book in there. As in, I could see all these other people written by alumni. And I was like, well, I don't understand. Maybe, who knows? Because again, it's a different read. It's not something categorically, you know, stimulating intellectually, like, you know, stem cells or something. It is something totally different. But some kid who's there, I'm sure has doubt, wondering if they're doing the right thing and pursuing their passion. You never know where you find inspiration along your life.
Yeah, I mean, you've written your book, you've coached around the world. What's next for you after this? Because you've already done so much.
Yeah, so currently, I mean, I there's many things that are out there. You know, I'd love to get back into college basketball again. And because I could see the transformation in young kids' lives. I'd love to do that again. But it is about a connection and who you know all the time. I do get afforded the opportunities to coach professional basketball a lot. And there is a sacrifice with coaching professional basketball in that I have to leave the country. And so it's unique that I get to see the world, but I am away. So that's the downside to it. You know, I'm just open to all opportunities. I try to talk to as many people along my journey as I can, meet interesting people along the way that I can. And I think, you know, really my purpose in life is to help others. I'm always, it's one thing I've been gifted with is that I know somebody somehow, some way that can help someone. And it's just that way, you know, like, you never know. But I do know that I wouldn't have been given the opportunities I had in life had somebody not done that for me. And that's probably how I see the world working. You know, Jennifer, many people tell me, like, you know, wow, you should be in this. And yeah, but the people you speak with, you don't know if they hold true to their word. You don't know if they have that contract with themselves to say, like, oh, yes, I do know that person, John. I'm going to make a phone call on your behalf. You don't know when they hang up the phone if they ever do that. And that's what what many students are realizing when they're finishing, you know, since this podcast is for UC San Diego, many UCSD students are finishing and they're contacting people and you just don't know who is really saying what they say. And so you just got to constantly keep pursuing other avenues constantly. And because one door will close, you still should have four others that are remain open. Keep doing it. I think that's what this economy is showing us now. This pandemic now is family relationships matter. A new way of doing things matters. And traditional ways of going to a place of occupation is different. And they could still pursue their passions, like you and I. We're still on the call. And while we haven't met each other face to face, we're having a relationship over this new technology now. And this new technology wasn't available to me when I was a senior in college. So look at how great the world is still.
Right. Well, I think that's a perfect note to end on, John. I mean, there really is still hope out there and those relationships really are key. So thank you so much for taking the time to join us here today on TritonCast.
Jennifer, it's been my pleasure and honor. I'm a proud alumni of UCSD. And if there's anything that I can do for you, please don't ever hesitate to ask. And especially any of the listeners, I'm available. I'm on every form of communication there is known to man on social media. You can find me easily. So I have the most unique last name, so easy to find me.
Wow, Jennifer, so much to unpack there. I mean, what a story that John has. But I think for me, one of the most interesting parts was really early on in your conversation when he was sharing his time with John Wooden and some of those tales, just absolutely legendary.
Yeah, absolutely. I love how he influenced him, not just in regard to basketball, but in regard to life as well. And I had the chance to look at some of John's book, and it's so cool because he has so many more anecdotes of just talking with John Wooden in his book.
Well, and then even beyond that, when he played and coached internationally and coaching at the high school level, he's accomplished so much. And honestly, your conversation with him, which was about an hour long, I could have listened to another hour of that, and I'm still not sure that would have been enough.
Yeah, I feel like we really just scratched the surface there, but definitely lots of great stuff from that conversation. Coming up on episode 14 of TritonCast, we're joined by UC San Diego Athletics and CCAA Hall of Famer Leora Juster. She was the first Division II women's basketball All-American in Triton's history. Juster reflects on her time at UC San Diego and how her basketball work ethic led her to a career as a software engineer. New episodes of TritonCast premiere each Wednesday.
Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you enjoyed it, subscribe, rate, or review the TritonCast on the podcast platform of your choice. You can also follow the show on Twitter at TritonCast, and you can email your feedback for the show to Jenny and me at TritonCast@UCSD.edu. We'll see you back here next week.
You've been listening to TritonCast. TritonCast is a production of UC San Diego Athletics Communications. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on your platform of choice. If you have show questions or comments or suggestions for future guests, email us at TritonCast@UCSD.edu. You can also follow the show on Twitter at TritonCast.